Case of the Frozen Pussy, Slip or Trip, The Million Dollar Fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will find on the Miami Memoirs podcast. Strange Cases and Wild Tales presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of a creative Florida attorney reaching out over 60 years. There's more than meets the eye. In these sparkling memoirs, Florida attorney Louis Ress uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful, and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. Before we begin, I would like to tell you about a new book from Louis. Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring, Round 2 from the Amazing Life and Times of Legendary South Florida Attorney Louis Ress, takes readers from Brooklyn in the 1940s, via a spell in a top-secret army department, and a transatlantic solo flight in a replica Spirit of St. Louis, to adventures in and out of the courtroom in a sometimes rougher-than-ready 50s and 60s Miami. The book is available on Amazon, just search Louis Ress. And now let's begin.
Hi everyone, welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Louis Ress. I'm Jeanette, your host, and today we're on episode 38, Running. Okay, Louis, so your friends raised quite a large amount of money overnight for you to run for office, right? Does this have anything to do with that,
next episode? Yes, it's true. They wanted me to run for Congress, and I didn't have much of a chance, but I was running. I gave him my word. I couldn't back off. And I learned a lot. I learned that losers in the races for Congress are probably unsung heroes and often in other ways become winners. Well, it sounds good anyhow. Losers do give up a lot. They're probably not professional politicians. They have little or no chance of winning, but they do have points to make. And when they start to be heard, they may cause people to be more aware of the issues. They often can move the other candidates' positions closer to their own and to a place that is better.
Are they winners in any way?
Well, these are candidates that take a try at for idealistic reasons. They're not professional pros. So they lose, and they disappear soon after the votes are counted. And unless they are bitten by the political bug, they go back to what they were originally doing. Most of them go back to their law practices, and they forget about politics as a career. That's what I thought in 1970, 71, and I still do. But in many ways, they have a positive influence.
So what happened?
Well, as the word went out to my friends and clients, the checks started to come in.
Wow. More.
Enough to start a mailing and to seek even more money. And it's money driven. Initially, yeah. there was no rented election headquarters. The campaign was waged from my office library, and with the help of some volunteers, and we had some hourly part-time secretaries. And one of the volunteers was a college student. He was a really nice young man, and he was the heir to the Southern Wine and Liquor Dynasty. It's a very wealthy family.
Yeah, my mom used to work for them.
They're good people. Mm. And he was such a nice, sweet kid, gentleman, I should say. And we had the same views and the same goals, but I knew what to expect. I was on a lark because it was a dare. And I got serious, but I tried, but it was a dare. So it was going to be very hard to keep him from being disillusioned. And then we had bumper stickers. And the bumper sticker told the story. Put Ress in Congress. That's R-E-S-S and then C-O-N-G-R-E-S-S. So Ress was already in Congress.
Yeah, you're already in there.
So it was cutesy.
Yeah.
But people remembered it. And I started to make speeches at the condominiums and the Rotary and Kiwanis and B'nai B'rith and the Optimist meetings. And I'm not certain of any of those because some of them don't allow political speeches. But it was the nature of what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why elect me as your congressman? I'll tell you why. Just take a look on television at the body bags coming back home. And the government isn't allowing all of the pictures to be shown. Do you want your grandsons coming back to you that way in a body bag? For what?
And what was your congressional district like?
Well, I was in the 10th Congressional District in Southeast Florida, and it's long since been redrawn and renamed. But in those days, it covered the north part of Dade County, which was primarily Democratic, and the south part of Broward County, the half of Broward County, which was very strongly Republican and conservative, especially the Galt Ocean Mile area. Hmm. And it was described as the largest congressional district in the country with over 700,000 people.
So how'd it go?
Well, I started out without clearing my candidacy with the Broward County Democratic Party. Remember, I'm an amateur. And it was probably fortunate that I didn't go to them because they were originally not inclined to run a candidate at all. But they had an attitude. Hmm. How dare you run in our district without our permission?
Oh, boy.
And when I surfaced and I met with the three older men who were in charge, they rushed to put up the former mayor of Fort Lauderdale. And he was known as the Silver Fox as my opponent in the primary. And he was a real professional politician.
Hmm. Yeah.
So they did it primarily to defeat me because this was a matter, they didn't care about winning. They just want control of the Democratic Party in Broward County and of the process. So the Silver Fox started to appear at rallies, talking mostly about his experience in government. And he had his old mayoral election staff to reactivate. And the Republican candidate up for re-election, Herbert Burke, wasn't campaigning in the primary race. He would have the Republican nomination unopposed.
How did the campaign go?
Well, the campaign was going well. We took newspaper ads and we rented a storefront office and the donations kept coming in, but in small amounts. Don't delude yourself. There is a screaming need for large donations. Billboards do not come cheap. Television ads are very expensive. And of course, you're trying to do name recognition. And the cost of creating the right ad is murder.
So what did you do to raise money?
Well, I reached out to the unions, but since I was unknown and had no political roots, there was little there except promises to help me if I won the primary. Senator Claude Pepper, who was at that time serving as a congressman for Miami Beach and with whom I had debated years ago, tried to get some union money for me. But it was very little result. They said, we'll wait until the actual race, not the primary. So my best source came from individual small donations.
And were you able to get into issues that you wanted to raise?
I did, yes. There was always a sort of a rumored concern about the local waterways being polluted. Nobody had tested them or raised the issue publicly. So with a borrowed canoe and the North Miami Hospital supplying sterile bottles, we went out to test the waters. And the hospital performed the analysis. And our evening newspaper, which is no longer in existence, the Miami News, picked up the story with a full-page picture and an article on the first page of the second section of the paper. And there I was, paddling the canoe. Sure enough, the canals and the lakes right behind the condos into which the canals flowed were extremely polluted with E. coli bacteria.
Oh, wow.
And plus all kinds of poisons. Toxic waste was being dumped into the Snake Creek Canal by two or three manufacturing companies. Television became interested, particularly the original Channel 10, which is now, I think, ABC. We had the backing of two influential arms of the media, but not the Miami Herald, which was the kingmaker.
What about the other newspaper, the Miami Herald, the big one? What about it?
Well, Miami Herald sends out its picks for each office in a special election and before every election. And it was easy just to cut out the page from the newspaper and take it with you into the polling booth.
Mm-hmm. They have,
which people
did. They have a big weight.
So their election board interviewed each of the candidates. I thought it was going to be an enjoyable experience, meeting with intelligent, enlightened, moral leaders of the community. Oh, was I wrong? Instead of a cordial, intellectual interview with rational people who shared the same ideals and goals, I walked into a den with a long table lined with unpleasant, dour, aggressive, and patently jealous people. They did not like the idea of supporting a well-off young Ivy League lawyer with ambitions. Mm. It was not a good experience. It was like going into the courtroom when you know before your argument that the judge's decision has already been made and the court is just looking for a means to justify its ruling against you.
Yeah.
So it was with the Miami Herald Election Board. Boy.
And I'm guessing they had an attitude, huh?
Oh, man, did they have an attitude. The interview went this way. They said, "Why should we recommend you when you don't have any experience in government?" And I answered, "I'm well-educated and experienced in the courtroom, in military service, and in business. And maybe it's better to have a fresh person who is not a professional politician and who is not involved in Washington politics." Then they asked, "Well, what have you done to merit the position of congressman?" And I answered, "This is not a reward, but a commitment to serve. And it's an undertaking of responsibility. And I will have to sacrifice in order to serve." Then they got me with this one.
Huh.
"Why are your children not in the public schools?" I felt like saying, "What in hell's name is the significance of where my kids go to school?" But I answered it, and I said, "Florida is about the 50th in the ranking of state schools. I work nights and weekends to afford private schools to my children to assure them a decent education." Well, their kids went to Florida public schools.
Ouch.
They said, "Don't you believe in the public school system?" I said, "I am a product of the public school system, but they leave a great room for improvement."
What about the real issues? When did that come up?
They seemed totally uninterested in the burning issues like the Vietnam War. They realized that they probably couldn't control me. They didn't care that if a Democrat wasn't elected in the 10th Congressional District, and they really didn't give much of a damn about closing a bloody chapter in American history, a terrible chapter in American history. All they were really concerned about was the fact that my kids didn't go to the public schools.
That's pretty nuts.
Yeah, they're a mean bunch. They were really rotten people. And these are these great intellectual people on the board of the most developed newspaper in Florida, probably at the time, the most highly regarded paper. And they were a bunch of children.
Wow.
Years later, when the Miami Herald killed an expose on the automobile sales business, including the dealers' bait and switch tactics and other dishonest practices, because the automobile dealers threatened to withdraw their advertising, that's when I stopped reading the Herald.
Mm. And what could you do about it?
Well, maybe there were some things that we could do to improve politics, even though I was pretty much finished without the Herald's support. I thought, what about disclosing my income tax returns? Remember, this is 1970. I said, I'll disclose my entire tax return. And I did. And I asked that all the candidates for all elected offices do the same. Well, I did it. And the front page of my tax return was spread out on the first page of the Miami News. That's the competing newspaper for everyone to see. Even the editorial writers in the Herald thought that was refreshing. Not one other candidate that I knew of had ever voluntarily publicly disclosed their entire tax return. And by the way, it showed that I was going to get a drastic cut if I was elected.
Yeah, yeah.
So the incumbents sure don't want to disclose their income from insider trading. In those days, they did a lot of insider trading. It wasn't illegal. But if you try it, it was jail time for a felony.
Hmm.
So then there were, you know what they do. I just told you in the last
all those tricks.
Podcast, the consultation fees, the inflated phony speaking fees, the blind trusts with eyes in the back of their heads. What is a better way of taking a bribe than charging over $1 million plus expenses for making a short speech? That should tell you something about politics. And we let them do it, and they get away with it. And to this day, they do it.
They do. They definitely do. So how did it go?
Well, the primary was zooming towards us, and we could afford only one billboard. And I was spending my time shaking hands, going door to door, handing out leaflets at shopping centers, getting my signs in storefront windows, primarily in North Dade, and hanging out of a helicopter flying up the beach, holding a sign, "Put Res in Congress."
Didn't you get any help?
Well, I did. I started to get involved in this thing primarily because I got angry at the Miami Herald. I said, I'll show you. I'll make a run for this thing despite you. So Channel 10, the editorial staff became aware of what my campaign was about, and they realized that I wasn't trying to be a self-promoter, but that I was trying to end a miserably stupid war as quickly as possible. Does that sound familiar? And I wasn't trying to massage my ego. So they called and arranged to help us film some ads, which they played on the public interest section of the news. And they helped us make a movie, which is shown in the wee hours of the morning. I don't think anyone ever saw it. I got to film someplace. Maybe it was in part due to our efforts, but our polls revealed that the anti-Vietnam War feeling in the 10th Congressional District was mounting, and my name was beginning to be recognized. Things were really looking up. That's when my wife spoke to me.
It's getting real.
Oh, yeah. You know what she said?
What'd she say?
She said, "What are you doing? Do you know what you are getting yourself into? Suppose you actually win. Where would you live? You'll have to commute to Washington, D.C. We'll have no family life. You won't have any time for the children. What'll happen to your law practice? What kind of a life will you lead? You'll never be able to stop campaigning, making speeches, attending dinners, giving out awards, raising money all the time. When the party needs your vote, they will threaten you. They will refuse to put you on any meaningful committees, or they will bribe you or attempt to bribe you with foreign junkets, with use of government airplanes, and the granting of local government-funded projects that we really don't need.
Mm-hmm.
Or they will trap you and take things you say out of context, or they will run and fund an opponent against you. Everything we do or say will be subject to public scrutiny. Stop," she said. "Think it over."
Well, she had some really good points. And when she saw things were getting real, she's like, wait.
Well, I'll tell you, I wasn't even sure of a vote anymore. Election day arrived very quickly. So we had volunteers handing out leaflets at 3 or 4 polling places. You know, we were on a tight budget. The Silver Fox had Fort Lauderdale covered completely with his workers. And scattered reports start to come in. It was a minor race mentioned in between judges' contests. The turnout was surprisingly large, and the race was very close. When television went off the air, the race was too close to call. I was ahead by about 1,000 votes. The next morning, it was confirmed. We had polled over 1,000 votes more than the Fox. But the absentee ballots had to be counted. Oh, was I naive.
What happened?
Well, it was amazing. The absentee ballots were over 10 to 1 against me. 110 for me and 1,675 for the Fox.
Wow.
The Silver Fox won by around 500 votes or so in what appeared to be a very, very obviously rigged absentee ballot.
Oh, yeah. And what did you do? Did you get the question to question it or a recount of some kind, anything?
Well, in those days, it was almost impossible to overturn the absentee ballots, and the cost was prohibitive anyhow, and my wife was celebrating, and I didn't have to worry anymore.
Yeah.
My wife was thrilled she didn't have to worry. Edmund Burke, loaded with military complex money and sugar money, called for less government regulation of business, the reduction of taxes, more bombing and troops to win the war, and he beat the daylights out of the Silver Fox, who didn't have anything to say about the Vietnam War or anything else of any consequence. And the Broward Democratic Party didn't seem to give a damn. Fox disappeared, never to be heard of again. The war went on. The bombings increased, as did the body bags. Mandatory sentencing for minor drug offenses was accepted as the solution in the war against drugs. Young kids had their lives ruined because of a $50 purchase of marijuana, automatic 10 years in prison with no parole. And we started to march with banners flying and drums beating back towards the dark ages.
But that can't be the end of the story, right?
No, that's not the end of the story. A little over a year later, when my law office was really humming, I received a phone call from Bill Lehman. Bill Lehman was the chairman of the school board. Everyone knew Bill. He said, "Lewis, as you know, the 10th Congressional District has been restructured, and it now just covers North Dade. It's a shoo-in for a Democratic nominee. Let's talk." Alabama Bill was the only honest used car salesman I had ever heard about. The black community knew that if you weren't happy with your car or you had buyer's remorse, he would replace it, or he would do what was necessary to satisfy you. He was genuinely a nice guy, and he was very smart, and everyone liked him. Over coffee, he told me that because I was the last Democratic prime candidate from the North Dade area, I had the first right to the nomination. These were the rules of the road. And he offered to work with me and to raise funds for me and assured me that I would win easily. Of course, if you decide not to run, I would like to seek the seat.
What did you do? Now you had a great chance to become a congressman.
Well, I initially raised $10,000 for Bill Layman and much more in subsequent elections. He was our congressman for about 30 years until he became ill and ultimately died.
Aww.
The Dade County Metro and the Dade County People Mover and the Layman Causeway all came from his chairmanship of the Transportation Committee. Bill and I had breakfast together whenever he was in Miami. He loved the complexities of Washington politics, and he retired, as I told you, with the $2 million tax-free from his election funds, which he didn't spend and was allowed to keep. And that's the end of the story.
Oh, wow. So what do we conclude from this story? Quite a bit.
We conclude a lot. First of all, running for office is a great experience, and if you have the chance to do it, it's worth doing. Idealism is wonderful, but often impractical.
Yeah.
Politics is driven by power, which is involved with economics. Newspapers aren't much different, much better from other corporations, and are often driven by their own agendas and by money and profit. And they're worried about becoming extinct. They couldn't fight the Automobile Association people. And corporate money often influences the government. Those are some of the conclusions. But I can tell you a number of other things. I jumped in to the ocean, and it was cold and it was wet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was unprepared to swim across the channel. Preparation.
Yeah.
So if you want to run, I could write a book, a primer for you, and give it to you quickly.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Make certain you really want the job, number one.
Yeah.
Don't do what I did, which is halfway. Leave yourself enough time. I didn't have any time. Pick and choose the right battle. Don't go into against somebody that's very well established and has a big organization, has raised a lot of money, and has a lot of name recognition, like Kennedy, for example.
Yeah.
That's not a good idea. You must have a plan, and then you have to have a professional manager, and you have to have an organization, and if you line up support, then you'll have to raise money and commitments in the beginning before, not run around while I was in like a chicken without a head, and I couldn't get the money. You should have advisors, and they should be strategists, and you should have them before you elect to run. And then you have to have a large war chest, money. And also, you have to realize that you want to become a professional politician and keep running until you win. So, okay, those are some of the things I learned.
I think I'm ready.
And idealism, idealism versus practicality. Also, I'll tell you some things that you didn't know about people who lost races and ultimately wound up to be winners. Okay? So, for example, Nixon. President Nixon lost a run for the presidency in 1960 to John F. Kennedy. He lost the run for governor in California to Pat Brown in 1962, and he winds up president. He beat Hubert Humphrey, who wasn't really a strong contender. I don't know how the Democrats put it up. Bushes, you know, the Bush family?
Yeah.
Well, H.W., the father, lost about three elections before becoming ambassador to China. He lost congressional election and two Senate elections, I think back in 1964, around there. Then he beat Michael Dukakis, Remember the revolving door? You don't remember that.
I've heard of it.
The prisoner got out and murdered somebody. He was in favor of letting the prisoners out. Mm-hmm. And they had this show, the revolving door, where the prisoner was going through the door. Michael Dukakis was helping him through, and he was killing people. So they had they asked Michael Dukakis at the at one of the debates, the guy that was conducting the debate asked him a question. He says, suppose it was your wife that you let the guy out and he killed your wife. He raped and killed your wife.
Oh,
would
my
you
goodness.
Still feel the same way about releasing these prisoners?
Wow.
And then Dukakis had himself photographed in a driving a tank. So he was wearing this big helmet
that didn't fit.
And it was over his face, over his head. He looked like a jerk driving around in a tank. And it backfired.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a rule in politics, I can tell you. Never let somebody put something on your head. Ever. I think it was Calvin Coolidge or something at one time. Had somebody put an Indian headdress on his head. And he
oh, my.
And it didn't go
no.
over. It doesn't go over. Okay, what about Bush Jr.? George W. Bush in 1978, he lost too. In 1978, he lost his election for Congress. So he struggled. He lost, I think, twice also before mm-hmm. he started to win. And they got savvy. They learned how to win. Donna Shalala, who was the president of the University of Miami, runs for Congress down in the South Dade area. I think it was Kendall, if I'm not mistaken. And she gets elected.
Hmm.
And sure enough, she has to run again 2 years later. And there's a woman, Maria Salazar. So Salazar calls Shalala a socialist. This is the president of the University of Miami and a former, I think, secretary of labor or something.
Mm.
She's a brilliant woman,
mm-hmm.
Refined, elegant, charming, intelligent, what you want, honest, good. She's doing you a favor to serve as your congressman. They say, well, you're a socialist.
So.
And she said that Shalala got her orders from Black Lives Matter movement.
Oh, my.
So it was Donna Shalala wasn't used to politics, and I don't think she could stoop to being a sharpie and a crude person.
So she backed out?
Couldn't do any. No, I think she's going to run again.
Oh, she's doing it again.
Yeah,
all right, good for her.
That's what's going on. Okay, then these guys, they get their names out, so they all write books. So you know how many, I just question you. I love the Kennedys. Do you think that John F. Kennedy wrote Profiles in Courage, the book that he's so famous
no.
for?
No.
Well, he was a kid in college.
Yeah,
something.
No. He paid someone to do that.
They all have, or many of them have...
Ghostwriters.
Ghostwriters, mm-hmm. sure, professional writers and researchers. There's a whole thing for writers that you can hire research on the phone, research
yeah.
services.
Yeah, it's true.
And they'll do whatever you need.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we talked about politics where control is more important than winning. They want to have control.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's a nasty... to corporate power. It's a nasty business. It's very tough to get support from corporations, and you start selling yourself, and you have to become a prostitute. You mm-hmm. have to go to lobbyists, and you have to go to corporations and people who will benefit from your being elected.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means you may have to support wars that you don't believe in. Tobacco industry had a tremendous influence on politics.
Yeah.
And of course, they caused cancer. Big pharma.
Big pharma.
Or coal, gas, oil, that kind of stuff. You gotta take money from them.
Hmm.
And if you do that, you sell out. So it's not an easy thing.
It's a balancing act, really. I mean.
Yeah. So I think the best thing you can learn from it is that you have to be professional in your approach. And
mm-hmm.
you cannot approach it as a hobby or a lark. And you got to get the best advisors and raise the money and pick your spots. And
pick your fights.
Even if you lose, get your name recognition and keep running until you win.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Are you thinking of running again, Lewis? Is this what you're trying to tell me?
I don't tell my age, but if you knew it, the only thing.
You never know. Yeah, you never know.
I'm running the half marathon. That's what I'm running.
You never know. It's never too late, right? Well, thank you, Lewis.
Thank you.
Great story. I honestly didn't know this about you, so I learned quite a lot. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Don't forget to like our Facebook page, Miami Memoirs, and be sure to pick up a copy of Lewis Ress's new book on Amazon.